As we've seen, Bohmian mechanics is a deterministic theory of quantum phenomena. That means specification of the positions and the wave functions of the configurations and the wave function at some time, say t0, uniquely specifies the entire future evolution and therefore also the positions or the configuration at any future time. Now, one might be confused because it is often thought that the most fundamental features of quantum mechanics are randomness and indeterminism. Do we not have evidence of randomness in quantum systems? Do we not have experiments on identically prepared systems yielding empirical distributions? How can all this be if the foundation of quantum behavior is, as Bohmian mechanics states, entirely deterministic? The question is actually the much more general one of how randomness enters a deterministic theory. This question was conclusively answered for the first time probably in the works of Boltzmann, Smoluchowski and Einstein at the beginning of the 20th century. And it is intimately related to the question of what probability and randomness are, which is a very hard question. When one speaks about randomness in physics, one speaks about the typical behavior of empirical distributions, so of the relative frequencies of outcomes of measurements. In the following, we will explain this statement. The situation of how randomness enters Bohmian mechanics is pretty similar to the way randomness enters in classical statistical mechanics. So let us first have a look at a more familiar example from Newtonian physics to explain how all this works out. So consider a machine in which one can load 1,000 coins and that then flips these coins one after the other. Of course, Newtonian mechanics is a deterministic theory, so the outcome of the 1,000 coin flips, so whether they fall heads or tails, is uniquely determined as soon as we specify appropriate initial data for the combined system. That means, as soon as we, for instance, specify the positions and momenta of all the constituents of the coins, the machine, the table the coins fall on, the air surrounding the setup, and what else might be relevant. Every such initial condition of this combined system leads to a unique final state, which in turn gives a unique series of heads and tails. Now, to which specific series of heads and tails a certain initial state leads is of little practical relevance, of little interest. What is, however, really interesting and really of relevance is what typical initial configurations do. That means what the overwhelming majority of initial conditions do. Now, to say what the overwhelming majority is, one, of course, needs a way of counting states. But as in this case, the space of microscopic configuration, so the phase space of this combined system, is a continuum, we cannot simply count states like 1, 2, 3, but we rather need something assigning size to subsets of that space of microscopic configurations, in this case, the phase space. So we need something like a measure on the phase space. In a moment, we will see how to get a handle on finding the correct measure of typicality. But let us for now just conclude this Newtonian example with the following statement. If one analyzes the situation for a Newtonian coin flipping experiment, one sees that typical initial configurations lead to series of heads and tails that contain approximately as many heads as tails. Now, as I said, the situation of how randomness enters Bohmian mechanics is pretty similar of how randomness enters in classical statistical mechanics. So let us, in analogy with what we did before, now consider the Bohmian situation. So consider a machine that can shoot 1,000 electrons, all with the same wave function. Let's call this wave function small phi, one after the other, so one electron and then the next electron and then the next electron through a double slit. And after the double slit, they hit a screen. Now, as Bohmian mechanics is a deterministic theory, the positions at which the electrons hit the screen are, of course, uniquely determined as soon as we specify the wave function and configuration of the biggest relevant system, so the wave function and positions for the biggest relevant system. And we will, from now on, simply call this biggest relevant system the universe and denote its wave function by capital Psi, and its configuration by capital Q. Now, the randomness we want to explain here is the randomness present in standard quantum mechanics. That means, Even if we fix the wave function, the observed positions are still random. Now, let us fix capital Psi. So we take a fixed wave function of the universe and ask, what do typical capital Q do? So what happens for typical initial configurations of this biggest relevant system? Now, as in the case of the Newtonian example, we need a measure on the space of microscopic configurations. So in this case, in the space of possible configurations of the universe. Of course, this measure should be singled out by the dynamics. So let's not try to find such a measure. The only handle, so to speak, we have at this moment to finding such a measure is the dynamical law under consideration. Let us, for simplicity, start with a Newtonian example again, because it's easier to imagine, probably, or more familiar. So let us consider a Newtonian-Hamiltonian system, so a Newtonian system with a Hamiltonian description. We introduce a function, let's call it rho, which is the density of the measure of typicality in the case of the Newtonian-Hamiltonian system on phase space. What does that mean? That means if we have a set A, which is a subset of phase space, then we can calculate the size of the subset A, which I will just denote as mu of A, so the measure of that set A, as the integral over all the points in phase space that lie inside the set A of rho of x dx. This x is just a generic variable in this case and denotes, in the case of the Newtonian Hamiltonian system, a point in phase space. So if we have a system of n particles, then it's a point in R to the 6n. Okay, so this is what is meant by rho being the density of the measure of typicality. Now, in addition to this rho we want to find, what is given by the dynamics is a vector field V generating the dynamics, and I have a superscript H here because it's the Hamiltonian vector field in the case we're considering here. Now, what we want of our measure of typicality is the following. If we have a subset of phase space, and this subset is typical today, then the same set evolved until tomorrow, so if we evolve all the points in that set by the dynamics to tomorrow, should be typical tomorrow with respect to tomorrow's notion of typicality. This fact is captured, or can be captured, by the so-called continuity equation, which reads that the partial time derivative of rho plus the divergence of rho times v, where v is the vector field. I will put a superscript h here for our example, generating the dynamics, is equal to zero. Moreover, the way how to judge what is typical or atypical should be invariant under the dynamics, so it should be time independent. In our case of the Hamiltonian-Newtonian system, the easiest way to have that is to simply have a density that does not change in time. So a density for which the time derivative, the partial time derivative, is identically equal to zero for all times. Such a density is called a stationary one. If we now just assign equal weight to all states permitted by energy conservation, that means if rho is just constant for all states permitted by energy conservation, then we get what is the well-known microcanonical ensemble from statistical mechanics, classical statistical mechanics. Now, in Bohmian mechanics, the situation is in principle similar, but there is a decisive difference. Because the vector field we have generating the Bohmian dynamics is a vector field which is derived from the wave function, which in turn depends on time, we cannot hope, as we did before, for a stationary measure. But luckily, we already know that taking rho equal to the modulus squared of the wave function capital Psi, which also generates the vector field up here, satisfies the continuity equation if we plug in the Bohmian vector field for this capital Psi into the continuity equation. So this is actually what we used in the last section to motivate, as a heuristic motivation for the guidance law. So having the guidance law and seeing that this is so to speak the suggested or density for the measure of typicality, which naturally comes out of the guidance law if we just want to satisfy a continuity equation, so to have a well-defined notion of typicality. We see that this also makes plausible what we stated in the last section as axiom 3, namely that rho equals to modulus squared of the wave function of the universe yields the correct density for the measure of typicality. Now that we have a measure of typicality, so density for the measure of typicality, we can come back to our original question, which was, what do typical initial given a wave function capital psi, what do typical initial configurations of the universe capital Q do? For the moment, which was something we will see in the, one of the next sections, we will just assume that there is a well-defined way of finding the wave function of a subsystem given the wave function of the universe. As I said, we will prove that in one of the next sections, or we will show how to get such a subsystem wave function in one of the next sections. If we just take it for granted here, then we can show the following very important theorem, which I will write down. We can show, actually, that for every wave function capital Psi, so for every reasonable, or for every wave function that is a possible wave function of the universe, capital Psi, and for typical Q, where typical, of course, means with respect to the measure given by the density capital Psi, modulus of capital Psi squared, subsystems with wave function phi, small phi, have configurations distributed according to the modulus squared of that subsystem wave function. For our example with a double slit and the 1,000 electrons shot at the double slit one after the other, that means if the wave function of each single electron is small phi, then the positions at which the electrons hit the screen will typically be given by the modulus squared of small phi. This rule of taking the modulus squared of the wave function to calculate the relative frequency, so to speak, was already discovered, or was already used in the early days of quantum mechanics by Max Born, which is why it's usually referred to as the Born rule. Now, at this point, one might be urged to ask the following. If the particles always have definite positions, which is the case in Bohmian mechanics, is it not possible to prepare a subsystem not only with a prescribed wave function, but in addition to that, with a prescribed position? Is it conceivable that maybe with very clever experimental means in the distant future, with very clever apparatuses, it could be possible to prepare a system subsystem not only with a prescribed wave function, say small phi, but also with to prepare it with a precision or configuration that is prepared to greater accuracy than the uncertainty principle allows? Well, the answer is no. The easiest way to see that, or the best way to see that, is by just analyzing the theorem we just stated. One way of putting it is that the interaction between two quantum mechanical systems always is an interaction of wave functions. From that, one can show that no matter what kind of apparatus one uses, so as long as we are in the regime or in a theory, as long as we are in the domain of Bohmian mechanics, no matter what kind of apparatus one uses, no matter what the technological advances will be in the next several decades or centuries, it is impossible to prepare a system with a prescribed wave function phi and with a configuration prepared to greater accuracy than given by the modulus squared of phi. Another important consequence of the modulus squared of the subsystem wave function rule is that all the predictions of Bohmian mechanics agree with those of standard quantum mechanics. So why is that so? Let us first look at the obvious case. Both theories make the same predictions for the statistics of outcomes of position measurements. Namely, both theories say that if the subsystem has a wave function phi, then the outcomes of position measurements are distributed according, so if I do this experiment on identically prepared systems, are distributed according to the modulus squared of that subsystem wave function, small phi. But now let's consider a completely different measurement, like for instance a spin measurement. So we take a spin 1/2 particle, send it through an inhomogeneous magnetic field like a Stern-Gerlach magnet, and see whether it's deflected up or down. So in the end, the spin measurement amounts to a position measurement, amounts to whether the particle went up or down. So of course, this spin measurement actually is a position measurement. This is actually true in general. Every measurement in the end has to register in something happening in space or in some configuration in space, be it a pointer pointing to a certain value on a scale on a measuring apparatus, be it something printed on a sheet of paper or electrons moving in a circuit or what have you. So we can conclude that it follows from the fact that Bohmian mechanics and standard quantum mechanics agree on position measurements, that they agree on every conceivable measurement, because in the end, every measurement has to result in something like a position measurement. At this point, one should remark, however, that the distribution for the positions of identically prepared systems with a subsystem wave function, let's say phi, to be distributed according to the modulus squared of small phi, so this modulus squared of small phi law, was not just made up or tailored in such a way as to have the predictions of Bohmian mechanics match those of standard quantum mechanics. But this law just comes about naturally if we just ask, is there a quantum theory in which particles always have definite positions at any time?